am so excited to get to talk to someone who I admire and respect tremendously, who has just a powerful story of how God can really just redirect your path. And I'm just so excited to talk to Lewis Upkins, who is a serial entrepreneur, advisor to executives, advisor to the stars. Don't get me started because I will run down the list. Lewis, I'm so excited to have you with us today.
I'm so happy to be here, Nona.
I want to, before we get into where you are now, I'd love for you to take us back to your roots. Tell us who was little Lewis Upkins?
A troublemaker.
Oh gosh.
Little Lewis was born in Macomb, Mississippi, raised in Nashville, family of six, to a middle class family, low to middle class, and went to public schools. A kid that was always drawn to the arts, always drawn to entrepreneurship. Always, I would say, really early on at age 12, went to my parents and said, "Hey, don't spend another dime on me because I want you to buy me a lawnmower. And if you will, I'll pay for everything for the rest of my life." And I did. And so every Saturday, I'd cut grass, get up at six, cut till about noon, make about $600. And put all my money away. They used to call me Little Lewis Layaway Upkins because I would lay away all my school clothes. I'd work so hard this summer and lay away all my stuff for the fall. But yeah.
How did you even arrive at that recognition that you could be your own source of income? Because I have a 10-year-old son. I have two, 10-year-old and 7-year-old. They are not at all thinking about how they can generate their own income. How did that happen?
I really don't know. I just know as a young man, I always saw opportunity. And we lived on a dead end street, and many of our neighbors were entrepreneurs. When I think about it, we had a guy who owned an upholstery company. We had another neighbor that owned, and these are all African Americans, owned a gas station. So everybody was doing something. And I think as a young man, I would look at opportunities because I was an artist, but I was also a hard worker. And I would see a need in the community, like dirty cars. I'm like, I can wash your car and wax your car and cut your grass. So, I was always looking for the next thing that I could do. And I wanted to be self-sufficient.
So I want to ask, and we're going to talk a little bit about what happened in your family, because I remember we talked about what was a traumatic experience in your life, and you shared that with me. But what did you see in your home that you think has created the level of just diligence and professionalism that you bring to your life today?
Well, I saw both good and bad, just to be candid. I mean, I saw a father who recently passed, and was an entrepreneur. He had fourth grade education, but he had a discipline about him to really control his own future. And so at age 12, I watched my dad walk away from a construction company that he was working with, that he had earned about $100 million that year for the company. And they gave him a $10,000 bonus, and he wasn't pleased with that. And so he came home and he shared with us that he was quitting that job. Subsequently, I raised my hand and said, "Well, can I design the logo?" So we went and bought a 2x4. I designed the logo. We bought the laundromat around the corner, rented it first, ultimately bought it, and I watched him do that. There was something about watching my dad have the courage to step out on his own, but at the same time, there were other elements within our home that were a little challenging. So my father also grew up without a father, embraced a lot of those ugly behavior patterns, if you would, womanizing, drinking, etc. And so ultimately that came to a halt my senior year in high school when my parents divorced. Probably one of the worst years of my life, because if you watched the very foundation in which you had hoped to build upon kind of just fall apart. And so as a result, I really took away the good that came from my father, and I also recognized and made notable lessons of the bad that I wouldn't do. And so I think that's really shaped me in many ways. So I give him kudos for the good seeds that he sowed, and I give him kudos for the pivot of my life, of the pieces I didn't have to bear as a result of watching and witnessing him.
Looking back on that period, I mean, I'm sure there are people watching this who either themselves have gone through a divorce or maybe they were a child of parents who divorced. When you look back on that period, what would you say to first parents who are considering a divorce or getting a divorce, how they can kind of protect their children from some of the experiences that you had? Because I've heard that children that go through that, they begin to question their identity. They begin to question whether or not they were the cause. What would you have to say to them?
You know, there is no perfect marriage and there's no perfect plan for marriage except to embrace God in your marriage. And I think that, you know, often for my family, I could just speak for our experience. What would I say? I would say that your children are witnessing a very, very tough season. And for whatever reasons that you choose to depart, don't take it out on the kids. That was one of the things that I really watched in my family's experience was the kids really suffered. And so as a result, we watched each sibling kind of respond and react to that challenge very differently. Some of us soared and some of us didn't. And so I would say that just recognize that your kids really are also going through this with you. Although they're not able to communicate their feelings at that time, they will have those feelings for a long time.
So shifting gears a little bit, I often joke with you that I think you are the most interesting man in the world because your experience is just, they're just incredible. So you go through high school, 12th grade is just a horrible year. Take us to what happens after that, that places you on the path that you're on now.
You know, I would just say coming out of high school, I mean, my senior year was probably my best year ever, you know, for winning awards and things of that nature. The worst year of leaving school and coming home and dealing with the reality of family falling apart and really not having the courage to really kind of talk through it. I was just probably an emotional wreck that most people didn't recognize, but I clearly was. And then I went off to college afraid, you know, not prepared at all. I was a very good student, but I didn't have the family support like many kids have today, especially I would say our kids definitely have it. And so I went off to college really with a lot of unknowns. Like, you know, I didn't have the privilege of coming back home because we no longer had a home. So I was having to think and navigate a lot of things that many kids weren't having to consider. Long story short, studied engineering in college, hated every minute of it. I did not like engineering. I was a good student, you know, made great grades, but it wasn't my passion. And so my junior year, I really just decided on a Thursday that I'm going to come up with an idea and I'm going to invest my 300 bucks that I have. And if I sell out of this t-shirt by Sunday, I'm quitting school on Monday. And that was my business plan. And at the time it was interesting because there was a national push specifically in the schools called Just Say No to Drugs. And we lived in a community where drugs were very close proximity. And I remember just thinking, you know, obviously going through the season of a divorce with my family, that children didn't need drugs, they needed hugs. And so that idea hit me and I designed a t-shirt around that and then sold that to all the public schools nationwide. And, you know, and that was kind of the catalyst of the entrepreneur journey. And so that was the shirt I designed on that Thursday and sold out by that Saturday out of the trunk of my car. And that kind of led me into this entrepreneurial path. And then just one thing led to another, you know, it's like God was really in the center of that decision. And really began to just open doors that I couldn't have written a business plan for. I couldn't have predicted the outcomes. I could tell you this, I wasn't going to fail because it wasn't an option. And I wasn't going to do anything that was illegal because that wasn't an option. I was going to use the God-given gifts that he had given me, which acting, singing, drawing, painting, those things were natural gifts. And so I leveraged it and monetized it and watched God meet me where I was.
So first of all, let me make sure I understand. You were the creative genius behind the hugs, not drugs.
Yeah.
That is amazing. See, I just learned something I didn't even know about you.
That's every day.
Wow. I'm serious. Every single day, I learn something new especially about your social media prowess, but we're not going to talk about that right now.
I'm the worst. I'll just submit. I do not do that well.
Listen, I would love, because you mentioned arts and music. How did you get into the music industry from Hugs Not Drugs?
Interesting. I won like the state championship and all that stuff in acting when I was in school. I was a singer. I did talent shows all the time. So everyone's thought about me was, Lewis is going to do something. He's going to do something great. I was always the president of the school, president of my class, most favorite student, all that stuff. But what happened was when I kind of went out on this t-shirt journey, a gentleman stopped me in the mall. He said, "Hey man, where'd you get that shirt?" And I said, "I designed it." And he said, "Actually, can you design a tour jacket?" And I said, "Sure." And because I felt like I could design anything. And I could, because I'm a really good artist, by the way. And so he said, "You know, I work with a band, and you may have heard of them when it was BB and CC Wines." Well, of course I heard of them. And they were my favorite artists at the time. And so, and still one of my favorite artists. And so his name was Mikey, and Mikey asked me if I'd do it. And so I did, took his number. Long story short, delivered on what he asked, which was he wanted airbrush, rhinestones, silk screen. It was the most bizarre, but I did it. I rented an airbrush machine. I did the airbrush. I put all the rhinestones on myself. You know, it was a beautiful jacket. And so subsequently, BB saw it, fell in love with it, and said, "Hey, who's this kid?" He said, "Oh, it's this kid out in Nashville." So he asked if I'd do his merch. And that was the beginning. That door opened. And then once that door opened, I began to work very closely with B. And then that door just opened to the next door, and the next door, and the next door, and the next door. So that was my entree.
So from that, because there are people who have opportunities. And this is what I think I want to talk about. What separates people who have opportunities from people who are successful? Because that's different. What did you do with that opportunity? Because somebody says, "Hey, I want you to do my merch." There are many people who have been able to do that, but you don't know where they are now.
Well, so I would say I did a couple of things that I still do to this day. I overperformed. I delivered before he was expecting it. And I made myself referral. And so in that, I wanted to do an excellent job. Just because I was a kid didn't mean you could expect garbage to come back to him. So I wanted to give him something that was beyond anything he could expect. I wanted to deliver it to him on time or before time, and then to be referral. And so I think oftentimes we overthink the opportunities. We feel like we have to have a master plan to move. And for me, I spot the opportunity and I move immediately. And then stay in that place where, you know, one of the things I've learned early, Nona, was, you know, talent will get you there, but character will keep you there. And so I wanted my character to speak before my talent. And that has been consistent as well.
You're so right. And I think character doesn't get enough focus. People are so enamored by the sizzle of the talent. And, you know, that saying, you know, where are they now? I think that speaks to issues of character, because at the end of the day, that's what will sustain you. So you pivot into, you know, now this kind of referral based, entrepreneurial opportunity. How did you get into the artist side of music from there?
You know, I would just have to say, God. I mean, it's the easy answer. I have, I would say a bit of a renaissance guy. I have the ability, God's given me the ability to take big things and see them in the most simple way, and to offer voice or creativity, direction or purpose or whatever wrapped around that. And so it lends itself in so many different silos, you know, from music to film to the political landscape, to social justice, to, you know, you go down the list. And so, I think at the end of the day, in the center of all of that, humility is a big ingredient that has to show up first. And so with that, I believe God has just entrusted me with a lot of those examples where if I send Lewis, will he go and will he take me? And I think that that's really been the beauty of my success, is wherever he takes me, whether he's whether I'm at the White House, whether I'm sitting with Desmond Tutu, whether I'm, I mean, whomever, you're going to get the same guy. And that, I believe, is the other consistency that that many don't think about as entrepreneurs, is they think they have to show up in a different manner based on who they're speaking with or based on what door opens for them. And the same thing for me, I believe consistency and kindness are two ingredients that you can take anywhere and people will respond to them well.
I agree 100%. One of the quotes that I live by, and I've said this like in almost every talk I've given, is I think a lot of people aspire to be successful, but, and then they wonder, you know, after a person becomes successful, they say, oh, they changed. I don't believe success changes you. I believe it reveals you. I believe it
totally exposes who you are.
Yeah, it gives you the chance to be more of who you already are. Can you speak to that and your experience since you've been around so many successful
people? I mean, I think success just illuminates who you are. If you were a jerk and you were broke as the Ten Commandments, you're going to be a jerk when you're a billionaire. If you were kind and you were living on food stamps, you're going to be kind when you're wealthy. And I think that, you know, it just reveals the heart of humanity. It really shows us who we are. And so when you see people that are givers, they're not givers just because they just became wealthy. They were probably givers when they were kids. I'll give you a great example. I grew up where Mr. Winfrey, Oprah's father, was he was my barber as a kid. And Mr. Winfrey was a talker. He loved to talk to everybody. And his haircuts would take 1,000 hours. You know, and you get to the point where it looks good. And you say, hey, little Louis, how's that look? It's great. Perfect. Stop. And he'll talk another 45 minutes and cut your hair. But when I see Oprah, I see Mr. Winfrey. Mr. Winfrey, as a kid, we didn't have much. But you can go get bread on loan from Mr. Winfrey. He was our councilman, but he also had the corner grocery store. And he was a kind gentleman, and he was always giving. And so I believe a lot of what we see in her today are just the fruit of what her dad did on a normal day to people that could never pay him back.
That's such a good concept, I think, for people to understand is, you know, I've noticed this tendency. So I'm a millennial, and millennials get a bad rap, but I've noticed this tendency.
Really?
We're not going to go there. I know you want to go there. We're not going to go there. I've noticed this tendency to like want to rush to success. Like I want to rush to the top. I want to be the first, the youngest. And I think the problem with that is process matters because there are things that you learn in the process that will help you sustain that success, that'll help you build that character. What have you learned through your process? Because I'm assuming, even though it may seem to many people to be like a linear rise to the top, there have probably been some, you know, lefts and rights along the way. What have you learned?
I've learned to listen. I think that one of the things that for me and the journey that I've been on is I've really been able to just hone in and listen when God is speaking and when opportunity is sitting in front of you that's so different than what God is saying. And so being able to listen to what is right and what is not versus what I want. And I think for many entrepreneurs, just because you have the ability to fund an idea, you have the ability to buy a company or you have the ability to launch someone's career, doesn't mean that you should. And so I would say the biggest thing, Nona, is really just the ability to say no to great ideas.
That's hard though. I'm speaking from personal experience. I think that's something I'm struggling with and I'm working on is just because it's a good idea doesn't mean it's the right idea for you and your season and your time.
Right.
Switching gears slightly, I want to talk about, so you mentioned how you went through a devastating deterioration of your family as a young man. How are you able to keep that in your kind of rear view mirror of your life so that you're able to be the present father and husband that perhaps you didn't have then today?
You know, that's a beautiful question. In my father's death, I've learned more about him than I knew in his life. And I grew up in the house with my dad. But the beautiful thing is I've learned the power of empathy and his journey. understanding his journey really, really makes sense to me now of why both he experienced the life that he experienced, but also what has empowered the life that I'm experiencing. And so watching that and knowing that's in the back, that was basically a sequence of choices. My father was the recipient or was the child of an illicit affair. He didn't learn who his dad was until he was 13, sitting in the barber chair with his barber, who he didn't know was his dad until he told him while cutting his hair. He then signed up for the Army at 15, falsified his age so he can go into the military and fight because he was so angry and broken. Comes out of that 3.5 years later, marries my mom, has 6 kids, and quote unquote, try to be a father. So think about that. So never ever communicating any of that to the children, but having that in his rearview mirror. Then comes Lewis, and God rescues my heart early and says, I'm going to do something different with you. So what I recognize is that although this wasn't the perfect thing, it was the perfect thing. It was the perfect thing to prepare me for what I'm doing today. The pain that I felt is I have both the sensitivity and I have the insight and the spottiness that I can spot that pain because I've lived that pain. And so God has given me now the tools to be able to sit with the C-suite leaders, global leaders, family offices, all the above, entertainers, athletes, et cetera, to really help them avoid that pain. And so oftentimes what we think about is we think in certain segments of our life that this is the worst of times, and it was. But when I look today, I recognize that it is absolutely what has prepared me for today's times. And I'm grateful.
Wow. You know, I would love it, just in our last couple of minutes, if you would be willing, I sense that there are people watching this who they themselves may feel like either A, they are somehow beyond repair. Maybe they went through a familial deterioration, or maybe they have been really trying to achieve some dream that they've held in their heart and it just hasn't come to fruition. I would just love it if you'd be willing to pray for them, because, you know, you to me are the living embodiment of, God being a restorer, being a redeemer. And I feel like you have a special anointing. So if you'd be willing to just pray over those watching, I would just really appreciate that.
I'd be honored. So, Father, I just thank you so much for this for this opportunity to be your son, to be your voice, to be your vessel. Lord, I pray for those families that are sitting in situations today that they just can't see themselves getting out of. They don't see a way out. They feel like all the cards have been stacked against them. But Father, I'm here to tell and to encourage, Lord, that that all things work together for the good of those who love the Lord. And you have shown me that in my life. You have redeemed so much in our life and in our generation. And there's so much yet to come. But I pray for those families that are suffering today, those that are loss of jobs, loss of life, loss of hope. We recognize, God, that hope dies last. And so, God, I ask that you would instill hope in these homes. You'd instill hope in these hearts, that you'd help them understand that you are their dad, regardless of what their earthly father looks like, regardless of their earthly mother looks like and the way in which they may act. But Father, you can take those things. Your word tells me that you would never leave me nor forsake me. And I remember that anchor scripture in my life. And I said, okay, I'll lock in with you, Father. And then you also said that it had a purpose and a plan for my life. And I just encourage those that are listening today to know that there is a purpose and a plan for your life. God knew every little piece. He knew that I would cut grass. He knew that I would have a broken heart. He knew that I would find the love of my life. He knew that I'd father two amazing kids and a beautiful wife. He knew all of these things, yet I couldn't see those things then. So, Father, I pray for those that feel blinded in their purpose. I pray for those who feel hopeless in their journey. I pray, God, that you would lift their hearts, that you would remind them that you are still God in the center of chaos. Because when tragedy and triumph coexist, Lord, you can sit in the center of that, and you can bring the hope. And you can bring the power, and you can bring the love, and you can bring the forgiveness. So Lord, I pray for those that have hurt kids, hurt families, that we'd be able to forgive, because there is no future without forgiveness. So Father, I just touch and agree with those that are listening, and I ask that you would bless their hearts. I ask that you would bless their families and bless their communities and bless this country, Lord, in Jesus' name.
Amen. Lewis, my friend, just so grateful for you. I'm grateful for how God works through you, how you are surrendered to him. And just for everyone watching, I think you can definitely agree with me that we have an example of redemption. We have an example in his story that no matter what cards you are dealt, you can still end up with a winning hand through Jesus.
Oh, so, that's a good one. That's a good one. That's quotable.
Okay. Hey, put it on a shirt if you don't mind.
I'll put it on a shirt. I'm going back in the t-shirt business.
Thank you, Lewis. And thank you all so much for watching. God bless you all. See you next week.
Bless you.